You know how to book flights and hotels. All you're missing is a tool to plan the travel experiences you'll have once you arrive. That's why you need Viator. Book guided tours, activities, excursions, and more in one place to make your trip truly unforgettable. Viator has over 300,000 travel experiences to choose from. Everything from simple tours to extreme adventures and all the niche, interesting stuff in between. So you can plan something that everyone you're traveling with will enjoy. Real traveler reviews give the inside scoop from people who've already been on the experiences you're considering, so you can plan with confidence. Free cancellation helps you plan for the unexpected, and 24/7 customer support means you can travel worry-free. Download the Viator app now and use code Viator10 for 10% off your first booking in the app. Find travel experiences for you. Do more with Viator.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar-S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy five or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Welcome, everybody, to another episode of Positively Trek. I'm one of your hosts, Dan Gunther. With me, as always, the wonderful Barry DeFord. Barry, how much do you wish you were flying home from Vegas today?
To some degree, I can say very much so, but also the melancholy one feels when saying so long to your friends for another year or indefinite period of time. This is sort of the hard part, and shout out to Thad out there, Tyrannicus on the Twitters and whatnot. Thad, you kind of captured it well of like the, you know, I'm heading home now kind of feel, and yeah, I feel that. But it's been wonderful getting to live vicariously through all of our STLV friends.
Yeah, definitely. So as we're recording this, it's Monday, the Monday after STLV. Sadly, this year, neither Barry nor myself were able to attend, but seeing everyone's posts over social media, it looks incredible. I've been to SDLV many times and deeply regret not being able to go this year, but I'm so glad it seems everybody had a great time, especially given the kind of weird year it is with the kind of restrictions placed on the talent that are there.
Yeah, it was funny, actually. I wound up with my stepson going to a hockey event, and it was held at a casino hotel in Edmonton, the River Cree. And entertainingly, I kind of wanted to mess with some of the STLV people and take a picture of me in the casino near some slots or something and be like, yo, where are you at? But I decided not to, just because it also kind of made me sad to think about that, to be like, no, actually, I'm not here. I'm so far away right now. Anyway, bye. So I decided not to.
Yeah, well, it would have been definitely great to be there, of course. But we did get some news out of STLV, and kind of there's some different bits of Star Trek news floating around this week. But one piece that I really wanted to focus on, and that is this first look at Star Trek Prodigy Season 2 that was revealed at STLV. Now, of course, kind of odd given that it doesn't yet have a place to be seen officially yet. I think the creators are still very hopeful for that. But we did get this quick look at basically 4 minutes out of the second season of Prodigy. So, Barry, did you get a chance to get a look at this footage?
I saw the stills. I haven't seen the video yet, but was it 90% sure or 99% sure? Are they like that it's going to happen? Like, really, I just see all of this as that opportunity to advertise the interest that other platforms can look at this and be like, okay, yeah, we're going to make easy money if we throw this thing on here, kind of thing. And I appreciate that. And my hope is that this also means that it's going to find its way to DVD, because I am going to purchase season 2 when it comes out. because this is ridiculous. I'm pretty fed up with the whole platform thing, to be honest with you, and will be very slowly getting my own copies of stuff as I move on in life kind of deal.
Those of you, if you've not seen this clip, maybe skip ahead to our discussion, because this is our only piece of news this week that we're talking about.
Really excited to see the Doctor back. That is fantastic. Bob Picardo needs to be in Trek more often. I love it. And so that really excited me. And yeah, seeing the new Voyager, it is that kind of like a, it's like a shrunken down Sovereign class to me, to some degree. I do really appreciate its look. It's sleek. It's got some chonky nacelles too.
Absolutely. Yeah. 29 decks, which is either more decks than the Enterprise E or the same number of decks as the Enterprise E, depending on which movie you're referencing.
Well, come now.
But yeah, Lamar class, which is pretty cool. And apparently the Hagemans on their stage panel at STLV said that the ship design is named for inventor, scientist, and actor Hedy Lamarr. So,
oh, well, there you go.
That's pretty cool.
That is really cool. No, it's a good little nod to Star Trek fandom, giving us something that I think we feel very strongly about. We want to see this series. It's already made. Come on, right? Like, I was looking at some of our old episodes, outlines and stuff, and I was far less convinced that we were going to see Michelle Yeoh coming back, and now she's doing, you know, the little tiny mini movie sort of thing. But for them to pull Prodigy, I think it's important that this gets shopped around a little bit, that there is some interest. Who do you think might take this this on? What platform do you think might do it?
I feel like Amazon Prime maybe has a good shot at showing this, having featured Star Trek before internationally. Yeah. And they kind of have a bit of a history of taking some of these.
The Expanse.
Absolutely. And not only taking it on, but creating, going to the studio and saying more, please, which, is not outside the realm of possibility for Prodigy. I mean, it may be a bit of a pipe dream, but I'm really hopeful. I would love to see many more seasons of this, if possible. If somewhere like Netflix were to get it, just based on past performance, I'd feel a little less secure about its future. But if we do learn that Amazon picks it up, not counting my chickens before they're hatched or anything like that, but I'd be a little bit more hopeful, I guess.
I would echo that quite a bit. Mainly just, I think the whoever runs Amazon Prime specifically, they seem to allow a little more creative flow to go in many different directions and stuff like that. And yeah, anyway, I'm very hopeful seeing this come through. I was kind of watching it as it was being brought up and everything like that. And so getting our hopes up like this, it had better go somewhere, or else there's going to be some pretty angry Star Trek folk.
Yeah, absolutely. So also mentioned during the Prodigy panel at STLV, they're, like you said, 99% sure that Prodigy will find a place. And it has 7 episodes left to go in post-production. So 7 out of not 10, like other series seasons, 20. That's a huge number of episodes. And they're expecting to complete that around Christmas of this year. So they're working on it. They have money from Paramount to finish the series. So, I mean, they're not going to be investing that money if they're not fairly certain that they're going to get a return on that by some other streamer buying the rights to it.
No, it's good news.
Well, like I said, that's kind of all the news that I really wanted to talk about this week, because I'm really excited to get into our discussion.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99 cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Thank you. thank you so much for downloading this episode of Positively Trek. We truly do appreciate each and every one of our listeners, and I'd like to especially thank our Patreon supporters. Thank you to our Constitution Class supporters, Jim Stoffel, Joyce Marin, and Paul D. Kinnear. If you'd like to become a supporter of Positively Trek and join our crew, please go to patreon.com/positivelytrek. You can get early access to episodes, exclusive content, shoutouts, associate producer credits, ad-free episodes, and more. Again, that's patreon.com/positivelytrek. Thank you all, and live long and prosper. And our discussion this week is all about what is known as diegetic music in Star Trek, and a little bit more specific than that. So those who don't know diegetic versus non-diegetic music, diegetic music is music that characters can hear and respond to on the show. And non-diegetic music is stuff like the soundtrack or the background music that we, the audience, would hear, but the characters don't. Now, of course, recently we got the amazing Subspace Rhapsody episode of Star Trek Strange New Worlds, which had me thinking about all of the previous times that music has featured in Star Trek, and like I said, specifically, characters singing or making music. And I kind of wanted to talk a bit about that this week because, you know, this is Star Trek's first musical, but all the way from the origins in the original series, all the way up through the new series, there's lots to talk about. So I'm excited to talk about this. I'm in a musical mood.
I am too. And maybe really quickly, just before we get into it, the step that Star Trek Strange New Worlds is taking by making this musical episode and stuff like that, I know it has got a lot of people excited. A couple of people are sort of meh about it, but it isn't something that's necessarily completely out of the ordinary when it comes to Star Trek. And getting to sort of do a little homework, Dan, you did sort of the preliminary, you gave a pretty good list of songs to check out and to reminisce on. And yeah, I mean, Star Trek is actually remarkably musical.
Yeah, from very early days as well. So Celia Rose Gooding's Uhura played a big role in this recent episode. And I think the earliest bit of singing that we can find in Star Trek comes from Uhura, the original Uhura, Nichelle Nichols, all throughout Star Trek, the original series. But specifically, I wanted to call out a couple of occasions that she sang Charlie X, which
Charlie's Our New Darling.
Charlie's Our New Darling, as well as, you know, that great collab with Spock, the grinning Spock as he plays his Vulcan harp.
Yeah.
And then, of course, The Conscience of the King, where she sings Beyond Antares over the Enterprise's comm system. Beautiful.
That one really feels a lot like that part of it. It feels very much like a sailor, right? Like a real person singing on a sail ship, and everyone just sort of in a quiet repose listening to this extremely talented person. Also very 60s too. You can really feel the jazz in Nichelle Nichols' voice. Would have been cool to see her, you know, really, like, I know she did a few concerts and stuff like that. I would love to have seen that.
Mm-hmm. And that's actually something that our current Uhura, Celia Rose Gooding, has in common with Nichelle Nichols, yeah. A pretty storied singing career besides her acting. So
yeah,
very cool. And a nice little legacy to kind of continue with that character for sure.
Yeah, definitely. It's good to see how much, again, you know, bringing a black actress to the forefront in Star Trek in such an early time. To us, it doesn't really necessarily seem that high concept, but really it would be, right? The idea that you know, this person is sort of leading the music, people are listening, people are engaged, people are interested, and she's a bridge officer, you know? Mm-hmm. So again, I think music has always been a really good way to kind of bring those political messages forward. But I do have to say that the Space Hippies and This Way to Eden, for me, are like nails on a frickin' chalkboard. as much as I understand, like, this and that, and like, I'm from, like, we're 90s kids, and so I say all of this knowing that the other shoe has to drop, but like everything that was obnoxious about the 60s was like rolled up into that one scene in the mess hall when the two of them are, ugh, I can't do it.
Oh, come on, Barry. Their sound is now. Real now.
Oh, my God. And then Spock comes in with his, like, harp thing, and he's playing that thing while the lady plays the bike tire. And again, you know, I understand it's all for the effect. It's all the really to get their henchman guy free from the brig and everything else. But like, oofta, it's so 60s. I used to watch Mystery Science Theater 3000. Those of you who don't know, basically picture a crappy movie from the 50s or the 60s, and then superimposed on the movie is like the front row of theater seats, and there's a guy and two puppets in the front who basically make fun of the show the entire time. Mm-hmm. And so I've seen a lot of 60s schlock because of that, and this is just dripping with it. I can't do it. So yeah, oofta. I have to say, I didn't actually rewatch This Way to Eden itself. I watched the clips and was done.
Yeah, so you're not even on board with gonna crack my knuckles and jump for joy. Got a clean bill of health from Dr. McCoy.
Oh man. Also, I think Uhura plays that harp thing better than Spock ever did.
Hmm. Ooh, contentious.
Her fake playing is more convincing than his fake playing.
I love it. Well, from there, you know, that's kind of the TOS live singing that we get. We get Uhura and the Space Hippies. We revisit it. You know, we don't talk a lot about a lot of films in this.
No.
Although I just remembered there is one that I forgot that I'm going to have to add to the list later now. See, this happens.
Star Trek Generations, isn't it?
Star Trek Insurrection, actually.
Oh, Insurrection. Sorry, that's what I meant.
Oh, yeah. Okay. Yeah. Yeah.
Sorry, I got Generations and Insurrection mixed up. Yes.
We'll have to talk about that. But we do have to mention Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, for a couple reasons. One, fun and good, I guess. And the other one kind of makes my meh list.
A little cringy.
Yeah, a little bit. So row, 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 row. Row, row your boat.
How many times does Bill Shatner say that? He's like, row, 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 row your boat.
You've never heard row, 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 row your boat?
Well, I'll start and you listen carefully to me and I'll begin singing and then Bones will continue. Spock.
Now, oddly enough, this of the two that I'm mentioning is actually my preferred. I enjoy this. It's fun. They're getting a little drunk around the campfire and, you know, expecting Spock to jump in when he doesn't, and frustrated, you know, when he doesn't jump in there. And he's trying to ascertain the meaning of the words and life.
I liked him better before he died.
One of the great lines of that film. Absolutely. Yeah. So that's fun. I enjoy that. You know, they're not accompanied by any kind of music. Actually, at the end, the reprise of Row, Row, Row Your Boat.
With that harp again.
Yep, Spock with that harp.
And Leonard Nimoy is really playing it that time.
Mm-hmm. I appreciate that. That's a nice touch for sure.
Can I give a quick honorable mention to Leonard Nimoy and his Bilbo Baggins song?
I think it needs to be mentioned.
If you don't know what I'm talking about right now, you are in for a treat, friend. All you need to do is go on your favorite video playing application on the interwebs and type in Leonard Nimoy, Bilbo Baggins, and just sit back, relax, and let it just wash over you, because it is the most goofy song in the world. I saw it, oh man, the first time I saw that was very shortly after I like binged out when I was a kid watching In Search Of, the show that Leonard Nimoy did. And my grandpa, who like saw that I was getting scared by the In Search Of shows, I remember, I forget how he had it on a video cassette tape because he watched Star Trek. And he was like, and it took him a while to find it, but he was like, do you want to see something absolutely mad? And I'm like, yes. And so he showed me that, and it made me not as afraid of In Search Of.
Hmm. Very nice. Yeah.
He would do the old like 2 VCR recording thing. And I remember he had a couple of movies in Dr. Zhivago and a number of Star Trek episodes. That's what I remember. Anyways, I digress.
No, that's great. Should we mention Shatner's spoken word album as well?
Yes.
I think,
man.
She backed her bags last night pre-flight. 0 hour. 9 a.m. Anyway, that's all I'll subject you to of my impression there. Oof.
And then go do Zap Brannigan with Futurama doing Lola.
Yes. Oh, man. Well, so one other mention from Star Trek V, The Final Frontier, I want to make is Uhura, and I put in Uhura in quote marks here, singing in front of the moons of Nimbus 3 to distract the guards, the sentry people or whatever, naked, and not actually her singing voice either. They overdubbed with another performer, so... feels kind of gross and exploitative and isn't even Nichelle Nichols singing. So
yeah,
that's kind of an in my book.
Give that one a pass.
Yeah.
Just meh, move on.
And I mean, I know there'll be fans of it, but definitely didn't leave the best taste in my mouth personally.
No. And the, I guess like, you know, kind of like two poles of a magnet. The other like bit with singing Row Your Boat and everything, it is very sweet to see the banter between, you know, Bones, McCoy, Bones, Spock and Kirk. Mm-hmm. It is charming to see, and it's happy, and it's a nice little resolution and whatnot. But yeah, the other piece is, I don't know, it's Star Trek V. What are you going to do?
Yeah.
It's sure. Not the best movie.
Not really, no. Well,
what does God want with a spaceship?
What does God need with a starship? Yeah. It's one of those films, and I'm gonna go on record here, overall I generally dislike the movie, but it's got parts that I really enjoy, and I think that,
like the marshmallow dispenser,
exactly. And yeah, the camaraderie between the three of those characters in those moments, those are nice. But I challenge you to watch this movie again. And keep this in mind, when Kirk is not on the screen being awesome, and he's always being awesome in every scene he's in, when he's not on the screen, the characters are talking about how awesome he is. And once you notice that, it gets very annoying very fast.
Because it was directed by Bill Shatner.
Yep.
Whereas when Leonard Nimoy directs, it also gives William Shatner a ton to do.
Mm-hmm. Well, let's leave the original series behind and move on to Star Trek The Next Generation. And when I initially made this list, I was thinking, oh, there's not a lot of singing. It's mostly instrumental stuff. However, as we're talking through this, as I knew would happen, some things are coming to mind. And one of which is not Captain Picard himself, but a doppelganger of Picard singing a rousing rendition of Come Cheer Up My Lads in 10 Forward to rouse the troops of the Enterprise D. I forgot that one, showcasing Patrick Stewart's singing talent there.
Also in Disaster, he and the kids sang Frère Jacques.
That's a really good point as well.
Yeah.
And in that same episode, we get just a little slice of Geordi LaForge's attempt at Modern Major General.
Yes.
A very, very small bit before he throws up his hands and says, I can't.
Yeah, exactly. So one that always gets me, and one I want to maybe just take the reins on here, is Riker. I am a trombone player. I am a grade 6 Royal Conservatory rated trombone player. At least I was a long, long time ago.
Wow, I did not know that.
Yeah, and played on some pretty notable, mostly in my high school days, jazz bands and stuff like that. I played for a jazz band that was actually one of the better ones in the city, and I was probably the worst player on it, but it was fun. And so getting to see Riker play the trombone was always really impressive for me and meant a lot. And most of the time, his slide is in the right place. So that's good as well. I mean, producing that is difficult because I know that, you know, sound and video don't always match when they're producing an actual episode. And so you can't really fake a trombone play really well because you can literally see where the slide is. Mm-hmm. And if, you know, you're playing, you know, like a B flat and your slide's like halfway out, well, no, like that's impossible. You're playing some kind of E, and I don't know what you're doing. So it's good. And I find in the one where he meets Minuet, who, when I rewatched that a couple of years ago, and I actually finally settled it once and for all, I thought that was a very young Kate Mulgrew who was playing as Minuet, but it was Carolyn McCormick.
Mm-hmm, indeed.
But just at certain angles, I was like, is that Kate Mulgrew? And I'm like, no, it isn't. But boy, it was for a minute there, I kind of lost. And boy, those two, the chemistry between Jonathan Frakes and Carolyn McCormick in that episode, in that scene, is almost as smoldery and hot as Nana Visitor and Renee Auberjonois. But we'll get there later.
Oh, yes, we will indeed. Yeah, Riker's jazz trombone introduced way back in season one and was, yeah, a hallmark of his character all the way 15. Through.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And Minuet came back a few times too.
Indeed. Yes, absolutely. Future Imperfect was.
And it works. Sorry, I'm interrupting you, Dan. A listener, you can't see this, but Dan is wearing a shirt right now that says what happens in the holodeck stays in the holodeck. And Minuet is a perfect example of that.
Absolutely. And I am wearing this shirt in honor of STLV because I could not be there. So
absolutely.
But a lot of very. TNG was very much known as featuring classical music a lot. And basically Riker's jazz trombone was about as contemporary as they tended to get, you know, between sea shanties, Gilbert and Sullivan, and classical music. That was about it. So we got many a concert on the Enterprise D. We saw, I think it was O'Brien playing cello in a concert, which they tied into in Deep Space Nine. I think he mentioned his father wanted him to be a cello player professionally.
Yes.
I think, if I'm remembering correctly. And of course, Data and his violin, we see quite a bit as well, both as his Holmesian character and as himself. So
absolutely.
I think the episode Sarek is probably one of the best features of that, where they put on a concert for the Vulcan ambassador who is visiting the Enterprise.
It's quite moving too. I really enjoyed it. Mm-hmm. The renditions that they would have, there was always something a little bit more kind of comfortable and amateur that I appreciated about TNG's display of music. Like, yeah, when Data gets together, it's him like a couple of dudes, or same thing with Riker wearing his like iridescent house coat playing trombone and stuff like that. I guess it's more of like a smoking jacket, but he ain't wearing pants usually.
And there's Troy off to the side going, Nightbird! Nightbird!
Oh, lordy.
So great stuff there. Again, though, moving into the non-singing side of things, we also get another member of the crew who takes up an instrument later in the series, and that would be Picard and the Resican flute that he obtained from the probe from the planet Catan. So the inner light, of course, being the introduction of that. But we also see him playing it in the episode Lessons with his paramour in that episode, Commander Nella Darren. And one of my favorite bits in the episode, A Fistful of Data's, where he's playing classical music and keeping time with it with his flute and recording the results, I guess, for later playback, which I think is kind of cool.
There's something about the sort of sentimentality that flute has with Jean-Luc Picard. And if I was to use a sort of some kind of icon to display or to take the place of Picard instead of his face, it would be a flute, I think, in a lot of ways. I think Picard was really incredibly moved by that entire life he lived in that simulation. And I think you can't simply walk away from it. I truly believe he mourns on and off. And I mean, you see it in Lessons, especially when he's in that Jefferies tube playing it, I believe.
Mm-hmm.
You really feel it. And I think that's important, and it's something that's always been important to me. I remember at STLV they had kind of like a Picard thing, the 1 year the Picard display, and I believe the flute was there, or at least a replica of it was. And yeah, it's always been something that stood out to me, and it's something that I really do think is such a huge piece. And I know a lot of member berries showed up in Picard, but I was really glad the flute got its due.
Yeah, for sure. There's a deleted scene from Star Trek Nemesis, and it's one of the scenes that I feel like got cut because the director didn't understand Star Trek. But it's a wonderful scene where Picard and Data are in his quarters talking about moving on, different phases of life and death. Very much, of course, foreshadowing the end of that film. But as they start talking about these themes, Data is looking around Picard's quarters and in a close-up shot picks up Picard's flute and looks at it and puts it back down. And I remember watching this with a friend who very much didn't like that because he's like, oh, it's just member berries. Like, oh, look at this. Look at this. But if you really watch that scene, and those of you who have the DVD or the Blu-ray of Nemesis, find the deleted scenes and this particular one. I think it very much resonates with that theme of life and death and paths, taking different paths and that sort of thing. I think it really works in that scene. And I think that was one of the times that I don't know if that movement was in the script that was written, but if it was, like, that makes perfect sense. The writer really made a good connection there, I think.
I find musical instruments have a lot of sentimental value to me as well. I mm-hmm. bought a bass when I was in high school. I saved all my money up and I went and bought it, and I still own it and I still play it from time to time, and it really does feel good to go back to it. And when I pick it up, I think of 14-year-old me playing that exact same bass. I guess no, I would have been older, 15, 16, probably. Whatever. It's been so long. But it does. It connects me to my past. It connects me to my life experiences, to the people who I've shared music with that bass. I don't think it's simply a member berry. I do think it's actually a fundamental component of what makes Jean-Luc Picard Jean-Luc Picard. Mm-hmm.
I'm such a nerd because I pictured you touching the bass and Picard saying, physical touch can connect us to the past in ways from first contact, right? Touching the Phoenix.
Exactly. Exactly.
Nerds. We're all a bunch of nerds. I love it.
100%. Speaking of nerds...
Yeah, I want you to talk to this because I had forgotten this and you brought this up. just so, go.
Yeah. The biggest Klingon nerd is, of course, Worf. And I absolutely love is that Unification?
Yes, Unification Part 2, I believe.
Unification Part 2. When he is in that CD bar and that lady is playing the Klingon opera, and he hears her playing Melota, and he turns and he just like grits his teeth and he's like, Melota. And just the way he says it is, you can feel like, oh, this is one of those Klingon operas that are just full of tragedy and everything goes wrong and everyone falls on their batliths at the end and die honorably with their faces to the battle. And it's just, I'd asked you earlier if you've ever seen It's Always Sunny in Philadelphia, and you told me no. So if any of you have, this really is reminiscent to me, if those of you have seen the show, with Charlie Day is kind of going through a psychosis phase and he's playing on the keyboard and he's singing about spiders and everyone's like, oh God, here we go. And it's a similar kind of feeling of like, it's when you see another nerd, right? It's when you hear something very nerdy at a table across the restaurant and you have to like get up and be like, I know what you're talking about. So yeah, the Melota scene. And for me, there are points in time when like a really good song for me that is like a total guilty pleasure, I will often go Melota. Like if there's so, you know, if Semi-Charmed Life comes on by Third Eye Blind, I'm like Melota. Just for whatever reason, I love that song and I'll sing the whole thing.
That's
so
great.
Anyway, yes, it's a guilty pleasure to watch that part of the episode because I love how much Worf just absolutely nerds out.
Oh, that's awesome. And he really gets into it. It's so much fun to watch. Going back and watching some of these has been just a true pleasure for sure. I do have one more to talk about with the TNG crew. And that is, of course, one that I forgot to put on the list and occurred to me as we were talking here. We got, like I said, Geordi with his little snippet of
Modern Major General.
Modern Major General, thank you. But we get another song from Pirates of Penzance. Is it Pirates of Penzance or it's at Gilbert and Sullivan anyway?
It's a Gilbert and Sullivan, yeah.
A British tar, of course, in Star Trek Insurrection. Sing, Worf, sing. No. But he gets into it eventually. And
he does.
We end up with that trio of Picard, Worf, and Data singing back and forth as, you know, a way to get into his base programming, I guess. So,
yeah.
That's fun. I don't mind Insurrection. I enjoy it. I think it's a fun romp. There's some things in it thematically that I'm kind of like in my later years annoy me a little bit. Why are the Baku all white and they're able to help them, but the natives from Dorvan 5 and Journey's End with the same situation, they aren't able to help? Anyway, putting all of that aside, I love that whole sequence. That is so much fun. That shuttle chase and the A British Tar singing. I will note, however, it takes two button presses on the main console of the shuttlecraft for Picard to bring up that song with the bouncy ball sing-along. How is that two button presses from the main screen?
Artificial intelligence, that's all I'm going to say.
Actually, now that kind of makes sense. I'm
the computers,
more okay with that.
The computer knew that Picard needed to do something. It knew that Picard would pick something like that. Yeah, that's what I'm going to say.
All right.
Even though right now, everybody, I got to say, I also like Insurrection. It's fine. The graphics suck. The special effects suck. But it's a really good episode of Star Trek. It's an episode of Star Trek that somehow fell outside of the season 7 and wound up on the big screen.
Yeah, absolutely. It's right alongside Gambit as a good season 7 two-parter, I'd say.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. Would have been a great two-parter. But anyway, we got it as a movie. I don't know.
Yeah.
Whatever.
So yeah, now we'll definitely move along Ooh. Home to Deep Space Nine. I didn't even intend that when it started saying it, but
beautiful.
DS9 is very musical, and
yes,
surprisingly so, I'd say.
I would say, and it gets more so at the end. And I do really feel in a lot of ways, especially when we start really digging into all of that crooner stuff around the Dominion War, it really was just 100% the writer's guilty pleasures being brought to the fore, and everyone and it just landing. Like, it really could have not landed. Mm-hmm. Right? Like, I really think about when people think of Star Trek, and I hate to do this and this isn't actually true, but like, I can gauge a Star Trek fan by how well they know their crooners. Does that make sense? Like, if you really like DS9 and you know Jimmy Darren, then you're going to know, you know, obviously the Rat Pack. You're going to kind of have a bit of an inside on that kind of Vegas style music. Mm-hmm. And I do think that it really was just something that they took a shot at, because I think a lot of writers and a lot of people on set must have liked it. And it just so happened, so did we.
Yeah. That makes sense for sure. I've heard this story, and I meant to look this up again to make sure that I got it right. And so I, you know, take this with a grain of salt here. But what I had heard was that Frank Sinatra Jr. kind of went to them and said, "I'd love to be on Star Trek." And they thought about like, "Oh, let's create this lounge singer character." And they kind of presented it to him, and he was like, "No, I wanted to be like an alien under a bunch of makeup." And they're like, oh, I see. And so that didn't really work out, but they had created this character. And so they got Jimmy Darren to play the role, much to the delight of myself and Star Trek fans everywhere. And again, I probably have a whole bunch of that wrong. I've heard little bits of that story here and there. I can't remember if that came out of the Deep Space Nine companion by Paula and Paula M. Block and Terry J. Erdman or somewhere else. But that's what I'd heard. And I'd love to look into the veracity of that.
Fair enough. I mean, I think like as an actor too, I think Jimmy Darren was fantastic. And then we're getting a little ahead. I want to go back to Move Along Home here in a second. But, you know, obviously he had already had a few dalliances with Star Trek actors in the past with T.J. Hooker. Playing mm-hmm. with William Shatner back in the day. I don't know. Most people probably won't say that he's the best or anything like that, but he is 100% my favorite, you know, Vegas style singer. I have actually from the heart a signed copy.
Nice.
And there are times when I'm driving, typically when I'm driving alone, I will blare just some of his stuff. Cause I think he's a super talent, absolute wonderful And I loved him in the Mirror Universe episode where he goes in guns a-blazing and just, that's it.
I love how little explanation they give that. They just have everybody go like, what? And then move on.
Yeah, everyone just sort of blinks and moves on. Speaking of probably what I did the first time I watched it was blink and move on. Move Along Home. I got to say, the first time I saw it, I don't think I watched the whole episode. I probably walked away from it. Since then, I have developed a love for it. But Dan, what was your first experience with Move Along Home? How did you react?
I loved this episode. And this was before, from the start. I mean, I was fairly young when I watched it. You know, so I mean, as an adult, I can absolutely look at this hour of television and see why and how it fails on a dramatic level and is not, you know, yada, yada, yada. As a kid, I loved it. It's only a game.
Right?
I love that. Totally undercuts the entire drama of the whole episode, but I loved it as a kid. And so the musical bit, of course, is the infamous Alla Moraine scene where the little girl is doing the kind of hopscotch type thing. And Bashir says, oh, follow her footsteps, and slams into the force field. And they figure out they have to sing the song as well.
Yeah.
And I just love this because their characters shine so brightly in that scene. And it's season one, so they haven't developed the characters very much. But Kira is like, Alla Moraine, count to four, Alla Moraine. It's so perfect. And then, you know, Dax very kind of rode and Bashir's, you know, not doing much with it. But then you get Avery Brooks and you get his just that voice.
Yeah.
Alla Moraine, count to four, Alla Moraine, count to four, Alla Moraine, then three more, Alla Moraine, if you can see, Alla Moraine, you'll come with me.
Alla Moraine, you'll come with me.
And I'm just like, oh my gosh, this man. Oh, I love this voice.
Yeah.
And it gave me goosebumps a little bit hearing it again, which is weird because he puts a little zhuzh in that and it's appreciated.
In some of his monologues, Avery Brooks puts some zhuzh into what he's saying. He is definitely very good at making anything look good. And yeah, I mean, like I said, I've come around to finding Move Along Home to be something of a romp. And again, you know, they're just throwing pickles. You're right. Season one, they're throwing pickles at the window to see what sticks, right? Like that's ultimately it. And it's a very high concept episode. It's funny, actually, I went and saw the Barbie movie recently with my family, or actually just with my wife. And speaking of high concept that I didn't get the first go around, Move Along Home was the same, but maybe I'll develop a love for the Barbie movie as well over time. but yes, no, it is a weird, weird TV episode. And it's funny, you came over recently to watch some Star Trek, and we watched some not very common Star Trek in front of my family who hasn't seen a lot of Star Trek. So I'm wondering if maybe the next episode I should show them is Move Along Home and be like, see, this is just Star Trek. It's just super weird. And then I'll play them This Way to Eden, or The Way to Eden. And really just turn them off.
Yeah. Oof, man. How to ensure a non-Star Trek fan in two easy steps.
Yeah, exactly. Then play Code of Honor and be done with it.
Yo, my goodness, yeah. The one other thing, and I mean, this isn't a review episode for Move Along Home necessarily, but I will say it's very TOS. Like, it feels very original series.
So, very much so.
For better or worse, I guess.
They're in a weird 60s funhouse.
Yeah.
I gotta say, and I watched this one twice over the last little while. If we get into Vic Fontaine now a little bit, I want to quickly divert us over to Nana Visitor. We've already mentioned her.
Mm-hmm.
When she does Fever, and it's just her hand snapping, and then she goes down, and she touches the cymbal, and then it shoots up. She could melt butter with that voice. Mm-hmm. Nana Visitor is a very captivating entertainer. That was a very wonderful little bit there. And I think Odo looked like he was about to boil near the end when she lays on the piano there. Oof-da.
Absolutely. I honestly, I've never been the biggest fan of the song Fever. It's just not one that's really kind of bubbled to the surface for me. But her version of it, I have Star Trek soundtracks, and that is on one of them somewhere, because I dumped them all on my computer at some point, so that track is in there. And it is so good, is by far my favorite rendition of that song ever, which is saying something because I think that song has been covered. I couldn't even tell you how many times by how many different artists. Mm-hmm. But Nana Visitor singing that song is, and I mean, and part of it is the personal connection I have with Deep Space Nine and how much that show defines what I think of as great television and great entertainment. But just hearing Kira's voice, Nana Visitor's voice singing that song, it moves me every time and I love it.
She does an excellent job, bar none. Another honorable mention though for me, and I think Frank Sinatra sings it. I like Jimmy Darren's version of It's Only a Paper Moon better, and it has everything to do with the eponymous episode, It's Only a Paper Moon, when Nog is recovering from his injuries after fighting the Jem'Hadar.
Mm-hmm.
And he's dealing with the fact that he's only got one leg, I think it was, and he's got that prosthetic and all that sort of stuff, but he's really having that PTS. And I really think they did a fantastic job of just getting that feel through by using that song. And so now when I hear the Jimmy Darren version of Paper Moon, I think of that episode and I love it more. So you're right. I mean, music is what we connect it to. And, you know, loving Star Trek for its music is, it kind of makes sense.
Absolutely. There's so many Jimmy Darren songs. This one, It's Only a Paper Moon, is so good. I think, again, because of that connection, like you say. For the longest time when it was first airing, I was obsessed with his version of I've Got the World on a String. I just loved it. I just got in a swingy mood every time I heard that, and I loved it. I still do, obviously. I think he's incredible. And even, it wasn't my favorite of them, but the role that the song All the Way had in the episode The Siege of AR-558, and yes, of course, which kicks off that arc of Nog's in season 7, really moving as well, for sure.
Absolutely. Can we go too long without talking about when Jimmy Darren and Avery Brooks get up on a stage together?
I don't think we can.
I gotta say, I was thinking about this. I would shell top dollar, honestly, and I really and truly mean this. I would shell top dollar to get the front table at Jimmy Darren and Avery Brooks just doing show tunes all night. I would be all over that. Obviously, both men are a little more aging nowadays, and I don't think Avery Brooks does public appearances, and I totally respect that. But if I could get into a time machine and convince both men in, like, I don't know, you know, 1999 to do that for me, that'd be pretty great.
Yeah.
So I'm going to get on that.
This was one, when I first saw it, was so incredible, and I could not believe that this was happening. What a voice. Like, the two of them singing together and Sisko doing that, like, that gravelly crooner voice for a couple of the lines and stuff. Again, that zhuzh, right? Like, he's so good. And also, in the context of the episode, it's kind of fun to try and think of when they cooked that up together, because like, he's kind of against helping out the holographic character early on because of his personal misgivings about, you know, that period in history for black people and yes, that sort of thing. Then he comes on board after, you know, Cassidy Yates kind of brings him around. They plan the heist. They do the heist. It all works. Everything gets reset. And then, you know, Captain, if you please. And he comes up on stage and it's obvious they've rehearsed this.
Yeah, because they're playing off each other.
I love it. I love it.
And that's it, right? And I think obviously Sisko brings up an extremely good point. I mean, I would counterpoint as well to say that, like, well, what are we celebrating by going into the holodeck here? We're celebrating black musicians, right? Like,
mm-hmm,
obviously some of the best jazz singers and musicians were black. They originated the entire music genre itself, right? So I do think that Avery Brooks does an incredibly good job of bringing that out. And actually, so I'm going to get a little technical here. Even in, like, the beats and stuff, the way he's playing the old style jazz, like, the best is yet to come. Like he's just catching the ends of the notes. Mm-hmm. Like he's pausing as long as he possibly can before going into the next bit. And there's even a point where he does it quite a bit, and it like the camera cuts to Cassidy, and she like gives like a chuckle of like, oh, I know what you're doing, right? Because he's just so comfortable in it, he can just sing it that way. And that's always been sort of the secret to jazz, is like you wanna catch it right at the end of that note there, really to ham it up. And you know, they often say like, oh, it's the notes not being played. It's also the notes that you take a long time to get to playing. And Avery Brooks is himself a talented musician. I can't not bring this up is when Bill Shatner did that lovely self-serving piece, Captains, and he went and saw the other captains from Bakula to Mulgrew. And Avery Brooks, you can tell, is 100% not having the interview. Like, he is not interested. And this is pure conjecture, and maybe it isn't the case, but I do believe that there might have been some cannabis involved on both men's parts when Avery Brooks is just playing the piano over the questions that Bill Shatner's trying to ask him. I love that because he's like, hey, girl, what you doing? Just, he's not interested in having this conversation. All he wants to do is play his piano. And I'm just like, shut up, Bill. Just sing along. It's beautiful.
Yeah, that's awesome. I love it. That's something I need to go back and watch.
Let's watch that together.
Yeah, like I feel like I've never sat through the whole thing because I feel like when I first watched it, it made me very uncomfortable. Like Bill's whole shtick and I don't know. I need to watch it again because I'm sure I got the wrong thing out of it, but I felt like this is very uncomfortable and I don't like this. And I want to check that out again because I do very vividly remember those bits and kind of laughing at Bill's expense a little bit there.
Well, and that's it, is you can very much tell Avery Brooks was not taking him seriously at all. And I don't really blame him, to be honest. I'm Team Brooks on that one for sure.
Well, we could talk about Vic Fontaine all night. I think the one last little bit I do want to mention is in the final episode, The Way You Look Tonight is just such a defining moment for that series. And a little bit of story that I read coming out of that is that when he sings directly to Nana Visitor, and specifically the line, that laugh that wrinkles your nose, of course, she's Bajoran, haha. Mm-hmm. She apparently wept openly on multiple takes of that, and they had to keep redoing that because she just couldn't hold it together. Like that makes me feel things deeply for sure. But now rewatching it and seeing that moment and seeing her reaction there and knowing how genuine, you know, the look of joy on her face, but also there's sadness there and knowing that that's real. It's very moving and an incredible moment.
You said it better than I could have ever. That's exactly it.
Oddly enough, we still have more to talk about with regards to Deep Space Nine, because there's one that maybe slips under a few people's radar. But when I first watched this, when I was younger and DS9 was first airing, I loved this moment so much. It's the season 7 episode Chrysalis. The second episode featuring the so-called Jack Pack, right? The genetically engineered misfits that Bashir kind of shepherded along a little bit. And the one character who was in a catatonic state and was being brought out of her shell. And she has, you know, a bit of a speech disorder because she hasn't spoken for decades, presumably. And in order to kind of rectify that, they all sing this Do Re Mi medley and keep changing it up. And because they're, you know, genetically engineered savants, they're brilliant at it. And by the end, it's this only using Do, Re, Mi, Fa, Sol, La, Ti, Do, this incredible piece of music, which I just love. And the joy on her face as she's singing. And it's just a beautiful moment. It's a problematic episode, but a beautiful moment.
You're right. The moment itself, the episode could have changed. Yeah. Anyway, I think the amount of creativity that went into building that as well. I mean, for a weekly episodic television series, it's amazing how much talent just sort of happens. And then it's on to the next episode, you know, like it, whoever put that together and arranged it, and then the actors being able to you know, follow that through. There's some serious talent there. And mm-hmm. it is something that, you're right, just kind of fly under the radar a little bit.
Yeah. It always kind of blows my mind that the actor that played her in that episode is the same one who played her in that first episode, Statistical Probabilities. And she didn't have a single line in that first episode and just sat there the whole time. And then in this episode where she's brought out of that state, she's incredible. Like, what an incredible talent. And
yeah,
crazy that she had so little to do in that first episode. I mean, she had some very physical acting to do as she kind of like, she's aware of her surroundings, but she never speaks a line. And to hear her voice singing this and it's incredible. It blows my mind every time that, like, how did you do that casting? That's great.
I had that experience a little later on, but I'll bring that up in a moment.
Oh, excellent. One last little bit for Deep Space Nine. I think this is something that is featured more across the Star Trek universe, but really found its place in DS9, with the exception of Malota, of course. And that is the Klingon songs, Drinking and Otherwise. Yeah. So The Way of the Warrior has a really great example with Worf singing a drinking song with an old friend. And Soldiers of the Empire, as they're flying into battle, one officer starts thumping on the panel and everybody starts singing this battle cry as they fly into battle. It's so good.
It's beautiful. And it is something that really does flesh out the Klingons. Ron D. Moore, my love goes to you, buddy.
Mm-hmm.
You really built that species. And obviously, right, with a culture, you need to have some kind of music. And, it you know, it's a familiar kind of music to some degree. But yeah, no, you fall in love with the Klingons more you hear their music. I fully believe that as you get deeper into there's stuff, especially through Deep Space Nine, where you start really getting an understanding better of the Klingons, how they react to things, how they act, how they that Worf is basically the sort of de facto arbiter of succession every time as well. No, it's wonderful. And so, yeah, hats off to Ron D. Moore on that one.
Totally. And also, just in that particular song, I'll always remember the camera panning across the Klingon bridge as they're singing. And as it gets to Martok, he says, "Mashta!" in time with the music, basically the Klingon word for engage. And he even does like the Picard hand signal to engage as the camera's moving across in perfect time at the pause in the music. It's so good.
Yeah, it's totally badass.
Absolutely. Another quick shout out to Ronald D. Moore. Apparently, and again, I need to look this up, but apparently back in the Deep Space Nine days, he was making rumblings about wanting to make a Star Trek musical. So there's nothing new under the sun, folks. These are not new ideas.
No, and again, like, if it isn't your cup of tea, cool, right? Like,
yeah.
I mean, oh, yeah. I think I have made my point very clear on how I feel about space hippies. so, you know, but anyways, Star Trek Voyager. I want to move us over here because obviously I am not a Voyager completionist. I have to say I really haven't watched a lot of it. And that is to my detriment. Again and again, I am reminded of that because Tinker, Tenor, Dr. Spy was a hint that I do know of because I had seen that one before, where Bob Picardo does his opera and does the amazing response to when Tuvok goes into Pon Farr. And he's singing along as well. I thought that was really cute. The dun, 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 dun,
dun. Yeah, La Donna Immobile, but
yeah,
singing about Vulcan Ponfar.
Get me the hypospray. I thought that was really, really wonderful. But then in Virtuoso, holy crap, can Bob Picardo opera? Jeezum crow, that guy is talented. And then obviously, like, when he was going into the alien opera music, it was very much like it sounded like he was just warming up. But the original bit there, my goodness, he is very talented. I was not expecting that. And had I have known that when I met him in the elevator at STLV, I would have mentioned that. I would have been like, you're actually like amazing at opera, dude. but I didn't get that chance. So I'll have to get that again another time.
Yeah, for sure. I don't know how many of our listeners, probably more than a few, are listeners to Garrett Wong and Robert Duncan McNeil's podcast, The Delta Flyers. And Garrett Wong, Ensign Harry Kim, does a pretty good impression of Bob Picardo.
Yes.
And he recalls that this was kind of originally Bob Picardo's idea to have, it's like, excuse me, Brennan, I think it would be interesting to have the Doctor sing opera.
of course.
That's my impression of Garrett Wong's impression of Bob Picardo. Thank you. Thank you very much.
I love it.
So, according to him anyway, that was his idea. And
it was a good idea.
Great idea. I love what it did for the character of the Doctor. Virtuoso, not my favorite episode. The Doctor kind of comes across as pretty in that episode, which was the point, but incredible talent for sure.
Holy cow.
Yeah.
I have a bit of a soft spot for opera myself. I'm not trying to sound, I don't know, snobby or anything, but I was, because I went to a performing and visual arts school, I kind of had a bit of exposure early, but in my 20s, there was a traveling opera of Faust et Hélène. And, you know, it's a story about making a deal with the devil, and that obviously doesn't go very well. And, like, the last line of Faust et Hélène is, all is lost. I burst to my feet and started clapping at the end of it. It was so moving because you could read along as they were, you know, saying what they were saying in Italian or French or something. But I do have to say, like, I got a little bit of that back when I heard Bob Picardo sing. I was like, wow, he is very talented. And if you do like opera, I mean, he's not like he's not a professional, but he's definitely like very talented for someone of, you know, like just a person who can act, right? Like he's not an opera singer specifically, but, wow, he's very talented.
Mm-hmm.
I was impressed.
Yeah.
I can't get over it.
Absolutely. And I mean, anything from opera with that incredible range to, his rendition of That Old Black Magic with Harry Kim and the Kim Tones,
right? Well, and then it switches over, right? Like he does a real good, just sort of, I don't know what genre. This is like kind of jazz, I guess, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Now, does Garrett Wong actually play the saxophone and the clarinet?
Apparently not. I was looking really on a website, and there was a musician who was analyzing it, I guess, and saying that, whoever coached him on his fingering is very, very good. So they do a good job, apparently.
Okay, because that's where I was like, because I don't know a lot. I kind of know the fingering for a clarinet, and I think that's pretty similar for a saxophone. Mm-hmm. And as far as I could see, he was relatively on point. Everything was to the point, and lower notes, you know, obviously had more fingers down, and higher notes had more fingers up. And so I was like, okay, I think he might actually be doing this. But yeah, no, if an actual professional's looked at this and have been like, nah, that's unfortunate. But Garrett, you had me fooled. Good job, buddy.
Yeah. Done his homework and been very absolutely well coached.
Props.
Yeah, absolutely. Harry Kim and his clarinet, which later he takes up the saxophone. And according...
Oh, God. I know why.
Hmm.
Original universe, Harry Kim played the clarinet. The second one played the saxophone.
Oh, my goodness.
I don't know if that fits in the timeline of things or not, but that'd be funny.
Not quite, but I like it. I like it. Apparently, and that was from the very first episode, his mom called Voyager because Harry had forgotten his clarinet. But there was no time to go back for it. And of course, then they were thrown 70,000 light years. So he was very far removed from his clarinet, but saved up his replicator rations for a month and replicated a clarinet in season 2 of Voyager.
There you go.
But then later takes up the saxophone. And as far as I remember from the Delta Flyers, I think that was a request by Garrett Wong to the writers as well, saying, like, can I graduate to the saxophone, please?
No, you get the tuba.
So, you know, we don't get a lot of it, but I would highlight there's an episode, I think it's the season 5 premiere episode called Night, where Voyager traverses this starless void and Harry Kim has the bridge watch and composes a piece of music on his clarinet that kind of is a theme for this traveling this empty void. And I think it's called Echoes of the Void, he names it, yeah. Or something like that. Nice piece of music. Very haunting.
It is. Yeah. It's good to see, and it definitely, eventually I will get all my Voyagers in one day. I promise.
And I'll give a little shout out to Seven of Nine. Sings a little bit, most notably in The Killing Game, when she's playing a World War II lounge singer who's part of a cell of the Maquis, the original Maquis, who are fighting the Nazis in occupied France in that holo program, where she's not herself. She honestly believes she's a part of the program along with the rest of the crew. It's a weird episode. The Hirogen have taken over the ship and decided to cast themselves as Nazis. So,
well,
there you go.
There you go.
Yeah. And she does some duets with the Doctor later, which are lovely as well. Star Trek Enterprise.
Not a lot.
Very unmusical group of people over their four seasons. I honestly, I didn't look further into this, but I couldn't think of any times where any of the crew sings or plays music.
Nothing comes to mind, and I thought we'd get something either maybe from Trip singing some kind of...
He plays the harmonica in one episode.
Yeah, some down home Florida song or something. Nothing. And then... It never really comes up. Obviously, the big musical takeaway from Enterprise is Faith of the Heart, the Rod Stewart joint that got a whole second life in the world of Star Trek.
Yep, absolutely. So Russell Watson's version of Faith of the Heart, which officially is called Where My Heart Will Take Me, because I guess they had to change the name for the cover. I don't know why. But yeah, the theme music to Enterprise is kind of the standout one there. Let's go on the record here. Let's lay our cards on the table, because every Star Trek fan I know who has seen Enterprise has an opinion about this. What are your thoughts on the opening credits of Enterprise?
Drum roll, please. Meh. It's fine. It's fine. I don't know. It sounds like something from the 80s. Because it is. It is very aspirational. Its tone is really off for a space movie, to some degree. It comes from a time, though, right? Like, it comes from a time, you know, this is shortly after September 11th. There's a lot of that kind of patriotic-y sort of stuff. I see what they were trying to do. And there are points in times where I will sing along to that when it's playing, and there's times that I'll skip it. It is not my favorite piece of Star Trek music by any stretch of the imagination, but I don't love it, but it's fine.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't like it to start. I hated it for the first two seasons. I couldn't take it. I would intentionally go heat my nachos up when that was playing, because I couldn't stand it. But yeah.
Yeah, I think my initial reaction was very similar. I didn't enjoy it. I found it very jarring from what we were used to. I'm going to go on the record now and say I really enjoy it now, though. I know it's cool. It's weird, but I really enjoy, maybe not necessarily those exact lyrics and that exact song, but I enjoy what it's trying to do. I enjoy the feeling it engenders in me. And visually, I know this has nothing to do with the song necessarily, but visually, the opening credits to Enterprise might be my favorite opening credits, just for the imagery we see and that sort of thing. So
I see like the Wright brothers and all that stuff, and Yuri Gagarin. Yeah, no, it's very, or maybe they did John Glenn. They probably would have done John Glenn. Anyway, it's great to see that. And just for reference, Yuri Gagarin was the first man in space. John Glenn was the first American in space. Mm-hmm. And I can't remember who they show, but they show one of the two gentlemen, and mad respect to both of them for going to space. but anyways, it's something that I think a lot of people lean into for the sake that it makes other people insane. So
there's that too, I'm sure.
Yeah.
Now the other question that has to be asked is, season one and two was kind of the original version of that. Season three and four, they added this like upbeat kind of guitar riff over it.
Yeah.
Which do you prefer?
Give me the original. The other version is trying to put lipstick on an orangutan. Just don't.
Hear, hear.
It was fine the way it was. You know what actually I really liked was the In a Mirror Darkly.
Yeah.
The Through a Mirror Darkly music. Like it's very like intense. I thought that was pretty great.
That was good. Yeah. Yeah. The season 3-4 added acoustic guitar over top of it is so weird, especially since like season 3, we're going into this Delphic expanse, this dangerous area of space where we're going to seek out this person who intends this group that intends to destroy the Earth. And dun, 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 like the credits come on and they're like all of a sudden 10 times happier. And you're like, what is going on?
Yeah. Whereas something like the Deep Space Nine theme, though also following like a season long episodic arc, if it was a happier episode or a less happy episode or, you know, Far Beyond the Stars, even that music works with every single version of it. It has enough. Whereas I find Faith of the Heart is very tonally specific, I think is maybe kind of what you're getting at, is that there's this like tone of a song and then suddenly it shifts, which I think is difficult. And I think, you know, with the new Star Trek episode coming out that's a musical, you know, finding the reasons to sing, I think, is always really important too. And I just, no one asked for Faith of the Heart, but it's ours now and we're happy with it, I guess.
That's a good point about the theme song. Like Deep Space Nine's is like equally
perennial.
It's haunting, but it's also triumphant, but it's also contemplative, like depending on which part you're kind of focusing on. It's very versatile. That's a good point.
I got to say, though, my absolute favorite Star Trek music is Voyager. And it's that part that do, 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 do. That part, very Gustav Holst kind of Planet Suite feel to it. I do have to say that like the Voyager theme music for me is easily my favorite.
I like that. Yeah.
That trumpet. Oh, so good.
I think Strange New Worlds is rapidly climbing the ranks for me.
Lower Decks for me, actually, as I like well.
That. Yeah. Yeah. Strange New Worlds, it's got that the TOS theme, but then its own theme kind of in the middle, and then comes back to the TOS and its own theme in the middle. I love that little bit because it's, I don't know, it's good. But yeah, Lower Decks is so reminiscent of a bunch of different ones too, kind of melded together. I love that.
That ba 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 ba. Oh, good stuff. Anyways, get me into it. Actually, another piece of music, and I know they couldn't. We're leaving the world, but the Klingon theme from the motion picture will always be a favorite as well.
Yeah.
But we're leaving the world of it. We need to finish off.
Let's get back to the diegetic music. Yeah.
Yes. Yes. Like a drill to the head.
Yeah. So Star Trek Discovery. Nice segue there. I love that. Not a ton of singing in Star Trek Discovery. The one that it really comes to mind from an episode, the season 2 episode, An Obol for Charon, Tilly singing Space Oddity with Stamets just before she gets a drill to the skull.
Yeah, she even kind of whimpers right before, and it's like, oh,
yeah.
Tell my wife I love her very much, you know.
The other little bit, and so first of all, the fact that it's a David Bowie song, I just think that's so cool that David Bowie's in Star Trek now. That's awesome. But the other thing I'll mention with them is they're a very musical cast, which is funny. Mm-hmm. They didn't do more of that kind of thing. Who knows? Maybe there'll be a big, huge number in season 5. I don't know. But there was what's the James Corden's thing? Is it the Carpool Karaoke? They all got together and did that. So not on the show, but a little special shout out to some of the talent there singing some of those. And I mean, come on. Anthony Rapp was in Rent. Like, come on.
I was going to say, you know, and as a bit of a nod to Mr. Rapp, the Discovery crew, it feels very much like the cast of Rent in Space to me in some weird way. They did seem like a really good ensemble of people who were friends. And you know, that's why I think that you can get away with a scene where you drill a hole in your crewmate's head and make it look believable.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, David Bowie in Star Trek, I think he would have approved.
Yeah. Well, Star Trek Lower Decks, Boimler takes up the violin and, you know, plays songs that he composes, such as Requiem for a Hug. And Mariner and Tendi blast him off the stage with their rock band in the episode Temporal Edict. Band.
and the fingers are in the right place for those guitar chords, too, which is pretty cool. Yeah.
Very nice.
Yeah.
So the other thing I wanted to mention about Lower Decks, and I might have mentioned this elsewhere, but the Lower Decks crossover with Strange New Worlds happens two episodes before the big musical episode. Do you ever think that Mariner and Boimler, when they're back in their own time, look up the star date and are just like, oh, we missed that by 2 weeks? Damn it! Oh,
it's true. You're absolutely right. Oh, that is brilliant. No, yeah, I would be kicking myself. My hope is also that this gets picked up a little bit by Lower Decks with that weird bird episode. They're very capable of doing some seriously high concept crap. And so I'm excited for that. But like, I often think very much of, I used to watch a lot of Macross as a kid. For those of you who don't know, it was also called Robotech. It was a Japanese animated TV show from the late 80s. Early 90s, and there was a lot of music involved in it. There was typically usually a Japanese singer lady sort of singing some, you know, really meaningful ballad over the explosions and destruction of giant space fighter plane mechs shooting each other and guys being like, "Nani korab!" and then blowing up. And you just see like those like explosions and laser beams everywhere. I really hope they pick that up a little bit. There's actually an animated feature, Star Trek, I think, called TIE Fighter. And it's done in sort of an anime style. And they definitely like there's some like very sort of cascading piano music while all these ships are exploding around the visuals and stuff. So I think there's room for that in Star Trek to kind of maybe do a little nod to the Japanese space battle music. I'm hopeful that's the case. And those of you who do know what I'm talking about, yes, I'm probably going to watch some Macross here in the next couple of days just to get that out of my system.
Nice.
Mid-May and whatnot.
Well, from there, I mean, I guess not much more with Lower Decks to talk about. I will say in Star Trek Picard, we learn that Worf has become a fan of Berlioz and listens to the same operas that Picard did in First Contact. And we got a little bit of Uhura's singing by Celia Rose Gooding in season one in the episode Children of the Comet. It's kind of a little prelude to showcasing her talents in the recent Subspace Rhapsody. So,
as Sisko would say, the best is yet to come, folks.
I think so. Prodigy. We got Murph. We got Murph lip syncing on stage in the holodeck. That was the only one that I could think of for Prodigy. But
yeah,
what
he's
a
not
moment!
Actually singing. Yeah, that was brilliant. Charming. Charming. Star Trek and music, I tell you.
It's a match made in heaven, right there from the very beginning. And, you know, culminating? I guess not culminating. Let's hope not culminating in the recent episode. I think more to come for sure. Maybe not another musical episode like that, but
yeah,
there'll be more music in Star Trek for sure.
100%. I think a musical episode, one's enough. Maybe years in the future we could revisit something, but I think this, you know, I mean, obviously Buffy did it way back in the day. There's been other TV shows that have done full musical episodes as well, and for the most part they just seem like a fun little romp, and that's what I'm expecting for Strange New Worlds.
Yeah. So to rattle off a couple more that just popped into my head so that to head off the comments of people, oh, you forgot. So of course, Data singing Blue Skies in Star Trek Nemesis, one of the good moments from that movie, I think. I enjoy that. The reprise of Blue Skies sung by Issa Briones in the season one finale of Picard, a wonderful moment. And I can't believe I forgot this, Agnes Girardi as the Borg Queen singing in season two of Picard.
along with
Patrick Stewart's wife in that same scene earlier.
Right. So there you go. Yep. Yep. Fair.
Yeah. I mean, Q plays the trumpet on the Enterprise bridge at one point. What else did we miss?
Messily. There is a mariachi band on the bridge very briefly. Yes, that is true.
Yeah. I'm sure we've missed more, but those are definitely the most memorable ones for me.
Well, Dan, there's a place you can go if you want to tell us that we've forgotten something fundamental to the musical history of Star Trek, and that is the Positively Trek Facebook page, where you rarely see me, but I am there in spirit quite a bit. And when I do show up, I try to engage as much as I can. But Dan, you're on there a whole ton.
Yeah.
So that is probably the best place to find us, isn't it?
Absolutely. Yep. The Facebook page and the discussion group, the Positively Trek discussion group, for sure.
Yes,
on Facebook.
That's the word.
We do have a page as well. You can like that. We don't post. Yeah. I mean, we post new episodes there, but the discussion's all happening over at the other place. So
that's the one.
The other thing you can
do. I don't
do
social media well, sorry.
No, it's all good. The other thing you can do, of course, is email us, positivelytrek@gmail.com. We will read your email for sure. Get a hold of us there. If you have any thoughts that you'd like to share, we will read them. And with your permission, we may read them in a future episode if you would like us to share your thoughts. So that's it for us. This was a heck of a lot of fun. I love music and Star Trek. I'm not a talented musician by any stretch of the imagination, but I sure gosh darn do like listening to it. So
I don't play as much as I would ever want, and so it's nice to hear talented actors sing and croon to me.
Well, thank you all so much for listening this week. We will be back with another episode soon. So until then, stay positive.
Please, not again.
I'll take you home again, Kathleen.
Swimsuit? Check. Sunscreen? Check. Phone charger? Check. Don't forget to pack the 5-Hour Energy. It fits great in a pocket or carry-on, and the alert feeling will help you arrive ready for anything. Now get 20% off when you use code 5HETRAVEL at 5HourEnergy.com. Expires April 30th. One-time use only. Not valid with other discounts. Remember, visit 5HourEnergy.com and use code 5HETRAVEL to save 20%.
Save big on brunch for mom, all in the Kroger app. Buy one, get one free on flavorful fresh Tyson chicken during our full line sale. Then mix or match during our 99-cent sale and get Kraft mac and cheese, Campbell's soup, or Bar S Franks for 99 cents each when you buy 5 or more, all with your card. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.